What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning into the Producer's Corner with Spuds Who Tight. Man, I have a hot show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented and gifted jazz guitarist who's also a Grammy winner for As a Producer and Engineer. Please put your hands together and welcome Mr. Paul Brown to the Producer's Corner.
What's happening, man?
How are you, Paul?
Great,
thank you, man. Grant, great to have you on the show, man. You know, for everybody that doesn't know about you, Paul, and just give us a little background on how you started and when you started in the industry.
Well, I for the last, say, 25 years, I've been predominantly a producer, but I started as a drummer, and when I was really young, I started, and my parents are both musicians, so they got me started pretty young, but played drums and, you know, guitar all through high school, and I was in bands and all that, and then I got hired by Long John Baldry to go on the road playing drums with my high school band, which was pretty cool at the time, and did that for a couple of years, and when I got off the road, I got hired as a second engineer at Warner Brothers Studios, and I was a Warner Brothers employee for, a few years. Learning how to engineer and produce, and it was a great time to be in the studio. My mentor, the guy that hired me, Lee Hirschberg, is an incredible engineer, and he's still, you know, to this day, is one of the best. And he did all his Sinatra albums.
Wow.
You know, Randy Newman and Mike Cooter, you know, just some great music, James Taylor, Gordon Lightfoot, and so a lot of the stuff that I got to on sessions back then was that type of thing, and I remember one of the early sessions I was second engineering for Don Landy, another great engineer, and Ted Templeman, the producer, and in the afternoon at Warner Brothers Studios, we were doing Van Halen's first record, and I was assistant engineer, and they came in at like 11 o'clock, and we worked till about 6. And then at night, in the other studio, Ted and Don were producing Michael McDonald's first solo album. And he had, you know, Steve Gadd and Chuck Rainey and Phil and Gaines in the band. So it was going from Van Halen during the day to those guys at night, and that was for like 2 weeks straight. You know?
Wow.
And it was like that a lot. I mean, I did a lot of work with Ry Cooter, and they always had just great musicians, and we'd go from working with Ry Cooter, you know, during the day to working with Sinatra at night, and it was just a really fun, inspiring time to be in the recording studio, and it was flourishing, and Warner Brothers was really on top of it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started producing, bringing bands in the studio, and because I was always writing on guitar and arranging songs, but even the band I was in as a drummer, I was arranging the songs, and I was kind of always into the production side, and then just kind of got into producing, like in the early 80s, I started producing the first stuff, and I never really listened to a lot of jazz, and I really didn't consider myself, and still don't consider myself a real jazz musician, but the stuff that I listened to, you know, back then, believe it or not, I mean, I was a Grateful Dead head, and, you know, I was into some more folk rock kind of stuff, and I did listen to Weather Report and George Benson and that kind of stuff, but it really didn't go real deep, you know, but my parents worked with, you know, Sarah Vaughan and Ella Fitzgerald and
wow.
Satchmo, so I got a chance to hear a lot of that stuff in person, which was really great, and Sinatra. So when it came time to producing, you know, I had a lot of different kinds of influences, I guess, and I was actually mixing a record for Dave Benoit. He produced this saxophone player named Sam Riney. This was like late 80s, mid 80s, something like that, and hired me to mix, and that was my real introduction to even, you know, contemporary jazz.
Sure.
And it was a cool album, and Sam and I kind of hit it off, and then a couple of years later, he called me to produce his record, and I produced like 3 records for him over the years, and started getting into that world, and then I met Boney, and then we did, you know, Boney James and I did 10 records together over a 15-year period, so, and wrote probably, you know, a couple hundred songs together, that's the other thing that I do is songwrite. So between all that, I decided to put my own record out as a guitarist, and that was about 6 years ago. I put out my first record on GRP called Up Front, and I got four records now, and now currently I'm with Pete Concord. And I just did a duet record with French guitar player Marc Antoine. So that kind of brings you up to where I'm at now. And like I said, predominantly been doing producing. And but over the last 5 or 6 years, been going out and playing gigs. You know, with trying to promote these CDs that I'm doing.
Sure. Oh man, like I said, again, such a diverse background. You know, going back again on your engineering background. I'm sure you're no stranger to the analog format of recording versus the DAW experience. What typical signal chain and setup did you have on some of the live bands that you're recording?
Well, I mean, the typical, you know, I mean, at Warner Brothers we had, you know, a Neve console and some great old 24-track machines, and it was pretty... I like all the old analog gear and the tube stuff, and, you know, I try to incorporate as much of that even now. At my studio, I still have a 24-track machine, but I haven't used it for a couple of years. At first, I was when Pro Tools, you know, started being the predominant, you know, force in the business. I started recording my tracks on analog and then transferring to digital and carrying on from then. And
sure,
some other stuff I would go back at the end and bring up the original tracks on the analog and mix them with the digital. But it's sort of become kind of a pain to do it that way now, and now it's hard to get tape, and it's hard to keep the machine aligned properly because there's not a lot of people that are working on them. And
right.
So we've kind of shied away from it, but I still have all my analog gear, outboard gear that I use, and typically if I'm doing vocals or guitar or sax or whatever at my house, I have an old... a Telefunken 251 microphone that I actually bought from George Benson, and I used that through a Neve, you know, old Neve preamp and an old Neve EQ.
Sure.
And I also have a rack of API preamps and EQs that I use, and just straight into the. I go into the Neve, out of the Neve into a LA-2A tube compressor,
mm-hmm.
and then from there I go to the Pro Tools input, which, you know, gives me a little bit of, because the beauty of analog recording is the little bit of compression that you got from the tape. So I like to compress everything just a little bit as it goes to Pro Tools. So when it comes back to my board, it sounds like what I'm accustomed to hearing, as opposed to like a digital signal, which doesn't sound very good.
Sure. Now, are you using Pro Tools conversion or Apogee converters?
I'm using the Pro Tools 192 now.
Oh, nice. Yeah, Pro Tools makes a really great rig. I'm pretty sure you're using the Pro Tools LE for their DAW system for sequencing and tracking.
Yeah.
Okay, very nice.
And, like George Massenburg says, you can do everything with it except sound good. I mean, it doesn't, like, when you were in the studio, recording live tracks and like that on analog, it's like, you know, you hear it go down in input, and then when you listen back, it really added a lot to it. But now you do a track and you do it digitally and you come in the studio and listen to it, and it doesn't add anything. It just like plays it back perfectly the way it went down, but it doesn't add anything.
Right.
So
exactly.
That's the basic difference. You know, I always compare it to like like in the visual medium, if you look at something that's been recorded on tape, like a movie on 35mm or whatever,
right.
Versus what a video looks like. And the clarity of the video is very real, but the 35, you know, analog just gives it this otherworldly, you know, quality to it that you can't get on digital video.
Right.
And that's kind of the way it is with audio. I mean, it's almost that different. So, you know, it's just try and get a little bit of that going on in the digital process, you know, as much as you can, I think really helps.
Now, give me your opinions on some of the analog emulator model plugins. Are you a fan of those, or you still like the outboard gear
I still use all, you know what, I don't use any plugins. I mean, the only plugin I use often is Auto-Tune and Drum Sound Replacer, and that's about it. I'm not a fan of their EQ, I'm not a fan of their compressors, and I'm not a fan of their, you know, almost any of their processing. I just haven't heard it. You know, I have old school reverbs that I use and plates and like the real thing, and
sure.
I can't simulate it. So far, I haven't heard it.
Right.
I know guys that use it and they love it, but I just haven't had that experience yet.
No, I totally understand. You know, now, going on your musician's background, man, who are some of the influences that kind of really inspired you to become a musician outside from an engineer? When did you start to make that transition over to the music side of entertainment?
Well, I really started as, like I said, as a musician. I didn't start as a producer. And I mean, I love the Beatles, and they were probably my biggest, you know, early influence. I love the Doors.
Sure.
You know, I remember I went to Birmingham High School here and saw the Doors, Jimi Hendrix.
Wow.
And who else was on that show? Like Peanut Butter Conspiracy, and, you know, Yellow Pages. But anyway, yeah, Hendrix and the Doors at a high school football field. I was a big fan of Hendrix.
Oh, yeah.
And it was funny because on my first CD, I listed some of my influences and thanks. And, of course, I had Wes Montgomery, but I also had Jerry Garcia. And everybody's like, well, how could you have Jerry Garcia and Wes Montgomery in the same sentence?
I'm the Grateful Dead.
You know, I don't know how many of your listeners are in the Dead and have been to the Dead concerts, but there's no guitar player alive, as far as I can see, that every time Garcia did a solo, the entire 30,000, you know, people stood up.
Sure.
Every time, every night, every song. So who else can say that?
Right. Yeah, no.
He definitely had a thing that he did that just touched people. His melodic and rhythmic thing that he did was very, you know, unique to him, and as is, you know, Wes Montgomery, of course. But
right.
You know, I love Wes. I love Wes because his what he does is so accurate and so warm, and he did it with his, you know, with his thumb, which was really an unusual way to play, and he makes these real fast arpeggios sound amazing with his thumb. It's just incredible.
You know, as a guitar player myself, man, like you're saying, the techniques that people use it's amazing to me. I just spoke to Joyce Cooling a couple of weeks ago, man, and, you know, she doesn't use a pick at all. I mean, she does totally fingering on a guitar. I'm a total pick player. I need my light gauge and I need my heavy gauge depending if I'm hitting my solos or rhythm licks. So, yeah, man, I think guitar is just one of those things where I think really fits the personality and texture of the user, you know, so
I mean, well, I use a pick, but then I palm it when I play octaves and I play with my thumb.
Sure.
To me, the octaves just do not sound good to play with a pick.
No, it's too harsh.
It's just too accurate.
Yeah.
Too, you know, plucky or whatever you want to call
bright.
It.
Bright. Yeah, it's real bright.
Like that, and it makes a big difference.
Now, what kind of guitars do you play on?
I'm on recordings. Mainly an L5. I have a 1957 blonde L5 CES that's just an unbelievable instrument. And in fact, I've said it many times that instrument really is what made me decide to do a solo record, because I never really thought, you know, as a producer, you're always trying to get to that sound of an artist that's, you know, interesting and different. And I never really thought I had a sound that was interesting enough to hold a listener for an hour.
Sure.
And I got that guitar, and it was like all of a sudden, I was like, man, this guitar has just got its own vibe and its own sound, and it really helped me develop that. You got to have something distinct about what you do, or it's not, you know.
Yeah, I totally agree. No, I totally agree. You know, going into the studio and playing live, I mean, I know you have experience of both. Of the two, which do you prefer? I mean, I know they have their time and place, but is there like a comfort zone that you have of the two?
You know, I'm starting to really enjoy playing live. I mean, being a drummer for all those years and then being in the studio was definitely a leap of faith, you know, being the frontman and having to, you know, just talk to the audience, stand up in front of the audience and, you know, do that whole thing. coming from my background, but I've been, you know, I've done it a lot now, and I'm getting, you know, better at it all the time and more comfortable with it. And it's, you know, it's fun. It's nothing like doing a gig, you know. It's why we got into this. It's, you know, being in the studio is sort of second nature for me, but you don't get the rise out of it that you do playing live.
No, I totally agree. Now, when you're putting your studio tracks together, are you using the same band members you tour with, or are you hiring session musicians to come in and lay the tracks?
It's different all the time, but I mean, luckily, I've been, you know, really blessed with the cats that I do record with have been willing to go out and play with me. You know, I mean, I've had Ricky Lawson on drums, and I have Philippe Saiss on keys, and I've even had Jerry Hay on the road with me, so it's been kind of fortunate on that end.
Nice. Now, do you have a team of people that you put your productions together, or you kind of start 45-50% of it being a producer? I mean, I'm pretty sure you have a kind of a head start on a lot of the tracks you put together. Do you have a writing team that you guys collaborate?
You know, every project is different. I mean, I just got done doing a Huge Groove's new album, and I've done, you know, 5 albums with him and before, and he likes to, you know, go in and he works for like months on his tracks before I even hear anything.
Right.
And so, you know, by the time we get to the studio, he's really worked out what he wants to do. So we go in the studio with a great band and you know, make it sound good, and then they kind of replace everything that he did before. So that's one way that it works. And some other ways is like, you know, people call me and say, well, you know, what do you have? And so then they take my tracks, and then they either write a melody to it, or they take my melody, and so it can work lots of different ways. But I kind of enjoy taking other people's material and working it, but I've certainly you know, come up with tracks for people.
Right.
And it works that way too.
You know, I think that's just the producer side of you. You know, like sometimes we work better with other artists than we would maybe on our individual project. Maybe it's just a little bit more, for me, is like when I see an artist working with our versus my own CD, sometimes I can see the full picture and not be so indecisive on the track versus I'm working on my own. Sometimes you work, you know, you're your own worst enemy in the studio at times,
yeah.
So you try not to work yourself too hard.
Fortunately, it's that way. So otherwise, we wouldn't have any work as a producer. Everybody would just do it themselves.
Yeah, totally. Now, I had a chance, man, to listen to your latest single. Well, not a single, but a lot of the newest song off your CD, Flight of the Conchord, man. Tell me how you put that track together and who you worked with on that project.
Well, that whole record, the Foreign Exchange album, is this duet. I kind of was, you remember the George Benson Earl Klue record collaboration? That was back in the early 80s, I guess. That record I always really loved. And it's kind of modeled from that record in that, you know, I'm playing the jazz guitar and Mark is playing the nylon string guitar the same way, you know, George and Earl Klue did it. And the two sounds are very nice together, because if you put two electric guitars together, it doesn't sound very good.
Right.
Two nylon string guitars don't sound very good. You know, they can, but the jazz guitar and the nylon string is a very nice combination. But that particular song, which actually Mark's been a great help to me in the last year and a half, because we've been doing this guitar night, you know, thing that we've been doing, and when we made this record, I mean, he's a virtuoso, you know, and going in the studio with him and playing all these gigs with him really helped me bring my, you know, playing up a lot. And he swears up and down that on Flight of the Conchord, that's the best guitar solo I've ever played. I don't know. I like it. I guess he's right. You know, it's got a kind of a Kenny Burrell, kind of thing to it.
No, it's definitely got a nice groove, man. You know,
Mark came up with that groove, and we were watching this show on HBO called Flight of the Conchords. I don't know if you've seen that.
I've heard of it.
But, yeah, it's really, really funny show about two musicians from New Zealand trying to make it in New York, and they're just broke and, you know, get into all kinds of weird, you know, things happen to them. But they, in the show, they do these little video vignettes, kind of like Peter Gabriel videos within the drama itself.
So sure.
It's pretty different. And they have this one kind of French montage where they're going out with these girls and they're riding bikes and they have, you know, French bread and cheese and they're doing all this stuff and the chord changes in the song that they did in that video are similar to the Flight of the Conchords song that we did. And so that's kind of what the inspiration was behind that particular song.
Sure. No, it was a great track, man. And like I said, when I listen to it, it's a nice classical feel. And also, it kind of has a pinch of salsa as far as the timing and arrangement goes when I listen to it in my head.
Yeah, a little bossa nova thing.
Yeah. And Fender Rhodes. I'm a huge Fender Rhodes fan. So, yeah.
Philippe Sace played an amazing solo on that song.
Yeah, he did. I mean, that's what really stuck out. So I was like, wow, this song is really heavy. You know, I want to talk about one of your older tracks, man. I'm going to go back to about 2004 on this one on you, but it's still one of my favorite songs today, 24/7.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. You know, for one, oh, yeah, that's a hot track, man. It's an F minor, man. It's one of my funky keys I play on, so
yeah.
I find myself, every time I go in the studio, man, I'm just playing right behind you, adding new licks and adding my own creativity behind it, man, because it just really opens a good creative door for me, and it's really inspiration. I hear that song anyways.
Huh. Nice. Yeah, I mean, F is a nice key on guitar, you know? I mean,
yeah.
You can get real meaty with it down there, and it's better than E for me.
Right. No, I agree.
You know, I don't mind F sharp either, but I like F. And the new single that we're putting out now is called Brother Earl, and that's another little F thing. It's kind of in the Watermelon Man kind of vibe.
Sure.
But yeah, you're right. There is something about that key that is nice.
It is. Like I said,
it opens up the whole neck, you know?
It does. More beefy. Like I said, it's more beefy. I don't know. I hear in other keys, don't get me wrong, but it's just that F, man. It's just the tone of it. Kind of just opens up a whole new door, and just, you know, I can go a thousand ways in F on the guitar, or even on the piano, too, being a keyboardist, man. So, yeah, it's just a really hot track, man. I heard in the summer at that time, and it was just a good time and place for me at that time, so.
Well, that track, I mean, that was the one that pretty much sent the thing, you know, into motion, because I was writing and just doing my thing like I normally do, and that particular track was one that I worked on with a guy that I've worked on a lot of tracks with, and he sent it over, and I started playing the guitar melody, and came up with that melody,
right.
And then I played it back, and I was like, man, it was the first time I ever had the experience of, wow, this sounds finished. It wasn't like I need to go get Norman Brown or George Benson to play on it. It sounds good. So I played it for some people, and they're like, wow, it's great. Who is it? I said, well, it's me. And I said, well, shoot, come on. Do some more.
Yeah, man, it's really melodic.
That was the beginning of it for me.
Yeah, I have until it just has a lot of ear candy in that song. You know what I mean? And it just, everything just fit like a glove.
Yeah,
so.
Jerry Hayes did the flute thing, and yeah, it's very nice.
Yeah. Any upcoming projects for you, Paul?
I'm always, you know, trying to find some, like, upcomers or whatever. A couple years ago, I discovered this girl saxophone player, Jessie J, and so we've had a couple albums that we've done. And recently, I found this girl up in Oregon who's kind of like a Tracy Chapman meets Josh Stone or something. So I'm
working
with her over the holidays trying to develop her into something. But she's really great. And I'm talking to Al Jarreau about doing a record at the beginning of the year.
Oh, man, I'm a huge fan of Al Jarreau, man.
Yeah, he's the best. So that, and I'm going to be doing my fifth record probably, you know, in the springtime. I'll probably start working on that.
Nice. Any upcoming tours or concerts or anything? Or?
Yeah, I mean, we're always, Mark and I actually just got back from London. We went over there and played for a week at the Pizza Express, which is this little 110-seat bar that right in Soho. And everybody's been going over, and Peter White and Dave Koz and a few others have been going over to this club and playing, and they're sort of introducing, you know, United Kingdom to this thing, and they seem to really be responding to it. And we played seven shows, and they were all sold out except one, and it was a lot of fun.
Nice.
So, next year, we're trying to put together this guitar night again with we had Mark and Kenny Rankin and myself, and poor Kenny ended up, passing away a few months ago. But
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, we've been talking to Bobby Caldwell about joining up with us, and looks like that's going to happen probably in the summertime.
Wow, now that'll be a nice setup. Well, Paul, I do appreciate you coming on my show. I don't want to take any more of your time, man. Again, it was truly an honor to have you on my show, given the experience that you have as a musician, man. And from one musician producer to another, man, I definitely take my hat off to you. And you definitely have a spot here at the Producers Corner, man. I would love to have you back.
Great. I appreciate you guys keeping this thing alive, man, and promoting, and just any energies and efforts towards, you know, what we do is just really appreciated.
Oh, definitely, man. I got to keep the music alive, man. That's my mission and goal, man.
You dig.
Mr. Paul Brown, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much, Paul, man. And please don't be a stranger, man.
All right, bud.
Take it easy.
And a big thank you again to Mr. Paul Brown for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. It's always a pleasure for me to speak to musicians like Paul Brown, man, you know, who have such a diverse backgrounds and so many different avenues in the music industry as a recording engineer, a record producer, a musician and performer. And, you know, just sharing that experience, his work ethics, the artists that he's works with, the equipment, just the overall process of production, man, it's real inspiring again. And I really do appreciate him coming on the show again. For the remainder of the show, I'm going to let the track played out, man, that I definitely want to share with everybody, man. It's off the new Paul Brown and Marc Antoine Foreign Exchange CD. And the title of the track is Flight of the Conchord. And again, it's a really hot flavor of jazz, man. It's got a little bossa nova feel. And of course, the great friend of Roald solo on the track as well. So until next time, you guys take it easy. Keep it tight. Peace.